Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Zac Efron, and you're listening to The Stupid Cancer Show.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Tell me you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
This is the Stupid Cancer Show.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mundus.
Because he has a lot of chutzpah.
Hello there, children!
Hey, kids!
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now, the hosts of the Stupid Cancer Show, Lisa Bernhard and Matthew Zachary.
Woohoo!
Not that there's anything wrong with us.
Oh, yeah.
Monday, May 21st, 2012. Welcome to the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adult cancer. I am Matthew Zachary, a 16-year young adult survivor of pediatric brain cancer.
And I'm Lisa Bernhard, 17-year young adult breast cancer survivor, and we're your host for the Stupid Cancer Show.
17 years, huh?
That's right, baby.
You always got to beat me on something.
Got to one-up you on that one.
It's not okay.
It's not okay.
72,000 young adults are diagnosed with cancer each and every year, so got cancer? Under 40? Sucks, huh? Time to get busy living, folks, because the Stupid Cancer Show is changing the world, one chemo infusion at a time.
Tonight's show is all about our good friends at First Descent. Joining us, the man, the myth, the legend, Brad Ludden, otherwise known as Daryl. That's his FD nickname, of course. Young adult cancer advocate. He is the founder and CEO of First Descent. And Lisa, quote-unquote, stepmom, Goodman Goldstein. She is Director of Development at First Descent. And kicking it off in the Survivor Spotlight, our good friend, you know her, you love her, Allison Lolly Ward, young adult survivor, ovarian cancer, and she was the chairwoman of our OMG Cancer Summit Steering Committee. Matthew?
The Stupid Cancer Show is a production of Stupid Cancer, also known as the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, online at stupidcancer.org. We are not your father's cancer society, but we are bringing the cause of cancer under 40 to the national spotlight where it belongs. So, welcome aboard. Another fun-filled and exciting romp through the hay on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, where remission is not a cure and survivorship is all that matters.
And Matthew and I would like to extend a very stupid cancer welcome to any and all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network and on iTunes. You can download us. It's automatic. It's free. As we broadcast live every Monday night, 8 p.m., from the Chemo Deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan.
And a final reminder, the Stupid Cancer Show has a live interactive chat room. During each and every broadcast, we invite you to join in the fun, connect with our friends, and ask questions of our guests. And with that, happy Monday.
Here we are. Applause, applause.
Happy Monday.
Something like being able to cue up your own applause.
We own the show.
Keeps me going every Monday.
All I look forward to.
I'd actually like to take that recording home with me, just periodically just push it.
Exactly.
Yep.
Kenny, hello.
What's going on?
How you doing?
I'm well.
You look tired.
Tired. I'm drinking coffee.
He feels good, but
I feel incredible.
Look,
I'm wearing a brand new pair of running shoes.
That's not where I thought you were going with that.
And my brand new lucky underwear.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh.
Anyway, hello, Matt Beckett.
Hey, how are you?
You got to talk into the mic, my friend.
Matt says hello off mic.
Pull the mic right up.
There you
Step
go.
Right up, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
How you doing?
Great.
I'm just doing that.
It's a steep learning curve.
Keep the mic in front of your mouth.
It's like you say hey, I say ho.
Just
exactly.
pull it over by the base. There,
there
you go.
There we go.
Yes. I'm
Someone give
great.
Matt a cookie.
I'm doing great.
Give Matt a Kashi bar.
Matt's our new intern. The
Matt
other Matt.
The other Matt.
Yes.
Although I call him Matt 1 and I call you Matt 2.
Matt 2?
Yeah.
Oh, why?
Just
why am I 2?
Because you're not as cool as Matt 1.
Yeah, all right, fine. Well, James is not well. James, we wish you on the men. We'll have you back here real soon. And we have a special in-studio guest tonight just joining us for Shits and Giggles.
Drum roll, please.
I don't have a drum roll anymore.
What?
I don't know what my drum roll is
gone. Did we lose funding for our drum roll?
We lost funding for the drum roll.
The drummer quit.
Oh, well.
We need a new percussion section.
We'll just go to this. Please welcome Brooke Lorette.
That's a great It's a terrific build-up. She's heading out the door right now, actually.
Yeah, she's fleeing the building.
Yeah.
Hi, Brooke.
Hello.
We'll have you back on the show as an official Survivor Spotlight, but thank you for showing up tonight.
Thank you.
And you're from Connecticut. You are a young adult survivor.
And pull the mic closer to you as well, Brooke, right up there.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's
going to major in communications. You got to learn how to eat the mic.
This is your first test.
This is Radio 101.
I just had a little taster.
Exactly.
You're right over there?
As I swallow coffee the wrong way.
No.
Sorry.
Uh-oh.
Lovely. See, I can drink coffee the wrong way, too, you know.
This is only audio. You need to be able to talk.
Yes. Thank God I have a face for radio, too, which is good.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyway. So
what's new with you, Matthew?
What's new with me? I'm moving.
I feel like we always talk about everybody but you.
I'm moving.
What?
My wife and I and my kids, my 2-year-old twins, Kobe and Hannah, we are moving into a new apartment building over the next 3 weeks, and it is insanely hectic and harrying and annoying, and I'm exhausted.
I heard Kobe and Hannah are going to get their own little sublet.
Yes.
Sub-B-let.
Yes, they are finally going from occupying my bedroom and their bedroom to occupying their bedroom and their bedroom.
You're occupying Coney Island, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, it's Brighton Beach.
Oh, Brighton Beach.
Which is literally one street away from Coney Island.
Are you with all the Russian Jews?
Oh, yes. I'm returning to my roots.
Nice.
All those people that went to Shea Stadium today.
And we're davening.
And we're davening.
I was going to say, you opened the show with a welcome.
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 His usual phlegmy state.
That's terrible. Man.
So congratulations, Mazel Tov,
on
the new digs.
Yeah, so I'm just really tired. So anyway, we're off next week, not just because it's Memorial Day, but because I'm exhausted and we're moving.
See, this is what happens. We never are off on a holiday, but Matthew's exhausted.
Right.
So we get to have...
The news stops with Matt's insomnia slumber.
So actually, we're taking this holiday off.
Well, the building is closed next week, too, so it'll be 20 degrees hotter in this room than normal.
And that's different from every other holiday.
Yeah, I was going to say, that hasn't stopped us before.
This is when your employees strike back.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That gets one of these. That gets... The sad part of that is Lisa and I are the only people that know what that means.
Yep. Really.
Do you know where that's from, Kenny?
The Price is Right.
Okay. Did you guys know where that was from?
No.
I was going to say The Price is Wrong, bitch.
Well, no. All right. So the 22-year-olds in the room, no, you're 19. Matt, how old are you?
24.
The 24. All right. Well, grace period, I suppose.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I've been in the audience of The Price is Right. That's how old
I
am.
So have I. So have I.
You have?
Yes.
When did you go?
My friend Jason Rosenberg took me in the summer of 1994 to be in The Price is Right.
So you were out in L.A. So were you a Price is Right fan?
No. He's just like, we're going to go somewhere today. I'm like, where are we going? We're going to CBS.
You were tooling around L.A.? And you just drove to CBS and he took you to The Price is Right.
Yeah, I had a little sticker on my shirt. There's a Matthew on it.
Yeah. So did he work in the industry?
He sort of had a friend there, but it was just extraordinary.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I took Wendy, my wife Wendy.
I haven't thought about this
in
20 years, but the person in front of me and behind me won.
Oh, really? Did you make it on camera?
No, I'm sure I did at some point with the freaks in front of me, literally. The guy in front of Jay and the person behind me won.
Were they women with incredibly large breasts who just got up and jumped up and down?
Bob Barker,
yeah. He always picked the large-breasted women who just jumped up and down
a lot. Terrible.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So we were both there.
At the same time?
At The Price is Right.
No.
No, not at the same time. I took Wendy. She was actually a big fan of the show. I surprised her for her birthday one time in L.A., and she said, where are
she
we going?
She said, a piece of jewelry would be nice.
I know. So she said, where are we going? I said, it's a surprise. And to get to CBS.
And it was.
It's a true story. To get to CBS, we had to drive past the Hustler store.
Oh, God, what?
And she said, oh, my God, you're taking me to the Hustler store? I said, don't get your hopes up. It's just The Price is Right.
Okay. Fantastic.
Anyway. All right.
Well, we had two celebrity passings this week, tragic cancer from cancer, and if you can guess who this is, then you're a human being. I'm just going to skip the lyrics.
I really want to do
and
my impression.
That you, wander far from me,
you can never go wrong with the Bee Gees.
cookies, ever, nope, under any circumstances.
True that, Matthew.
Keep me warm in your love, in your soft with me. Said it's me you need to show. How deep is your love?
Oh, well.
I imagine.
Rest in peace, Robin Gibb.
Robin Gibb.
My dad's in the chat room, and I just want to thank him for force-feeding me the Bee Gees as a child.
So that's one.
It was a big, bad, sad week for disco.
And a big, bad, sad week for disco, too. We have a...
I love this woman.
Donna Summer can do no wrong either. You know, I can't find this on the radio. It's my favorite Donna Summer song.
It's a great song.
And I couldn't find it.
You
gotta be, it's got to be somewhere on iTunes. I'm searching on the radio, like everything except on the radio showed up
song.
In the search. Donna Summer.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Really sad.
Huge impact.
Yeah.
Huge pop culture impact, both of them.
Yep.
The soundtrack to our lives.
Yeah, indeed.
To our youth.
My dad writing it from the chat room. Beep,
beep, beep, toot, toot.
So he had, Robin had colon cancer, and she had breast cancer, died at 63.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Too soon. Terrible.
Stupid cancer.
Terrible. Exactly. All right. Well, on that note, let's give up some fun tonight, because we're bringing back our celebrity returning champion, and that would be...
Would you like to do the honors, or would you like me to, Matthew?
I'll let you do the honors, because
I would love to.
Let's cue up something really cool for her. How about this one? This is classy enough for Allie.
She's a classy chick, that
very
Allie.
Classy.
Allie Ward is a 4-year stage 4 ovarian cancer thriver, damn it. When Allie was told she may have only a few months to live in 2009, she decided to stop conventional treatment and focus on her quality of life. 2 years later, she still strives. No, this is a little bit... This is not 2 years later. This is 3 years later.
Yeah.
She lives life to the fullest, don't we know it, while living with advanced disease. As chair of the OMG 2012 Steering Committee, she's committed to supporting those affected by young adult cancer. Allie feels it's important to talk about the sometimes hard and uncomfortable issues, such as living with chronic disease and the dreaded D word. She is a kick-ass member of our community. As we said, she was completely and utterly responsible for putting together the OMG Summit. You know where you love her? Allie Lolly, nickname Ward. Allie Ward, welcome to the show.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hello, my darling.
How are you?
Did you miss me?
I have. It's been all of like 48 hours since I've talked to you.
I know, but did you miss Kenny Moore?
It's been all of 4 hours.
Maybe she missed Lisa the most.
I talked to him
most.
4 hours ago.
No, you missed Lisa the most.
Yes.
I do.
We have to stick together.
You're the cowardly lion.
The women
do. No,
the
scarecrow. Which is the one, Dorothy, would miss the most? The scarecrow.
The scarecrow.
The women of stupid cancer, yeah.
Yes,
that's right.
Exactly.
Allie and I FaceTime randomly.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that what you call it these days? You crazy kid.
Hey, don't spread rumors.
Well, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor.
This show is about our partners at First Descents, and we wanted to bring you back because there are so many success stories for people that go to First Descents whose lives are transformed. But it doesn't typically happen in your situation because it was long after you were diagnosed. You had gone 3 years after your diagnosis, 2 years after you're diagnosed, instead of within, you know, a very short period of time like most of them are. It's like a prescription for survivorship. And then it changed your life in a very different way. And I'd like you to comment on that because that's my perception. I've known dozens of people that have gone to FD. But why don't we start with your story, for those who have not heard it, and how you you came to find out about Allie 2.0.
Okay. Well, let's see. 4 years and 11 months ago, almost to the date, it'll be 5 years in June, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and I was 35 years old, and it was life-changing, and I did treatment for the first year and a half, and the cancer kept spreading, and life kept getting harder, and the doctors turned to me and said, you know, we can't give you a cure, we can just give you time, and I continued treatment for a while, but the treatment was making me so sick, it was really hurting my quality of life. So I made the very tough decision in January of 2009 to stop treatment. The doctors fully expected me to only live 3 to 6 months. They were wrong, obviously, because it's much longer after that, and I have survived. But those years were rough, and I didn't do a whole lot. For a while, I was very ill, but for a long time, I was just sitting around waiting to die, and was spending a lot of time in my lazy boy and really didn't think that I had a future. And that was really tough.
Allie, tell us about what it's like when you approach friends and family and tell them that you're going to stop your treatment.
Some people were really supportive because they saw how horrible it was and how sick I was and that I really didn't do anything. I mean, I worked and then I slept or threw up or different things like that. I didn't have the energy to be who I was, and so I really was a shell of who I used to be. And some people really understood that. Other people saw it as giving up and really had a hard time. And a lot of it wasn't criticism of me. It's just that they weren't ready to lose me. So therefore, they thought that I should continue or try everything, throw at it, you know, the kitchen sink at cancer if it was going to help me survive.
So you're sitting on the couch then and you're thinking, you said like you're waiting to die and you're sitting on your lazy boy, but you're one of the most active, vital, vibrant people that I know. So at what point was there a change or a turning point where you said, screw this, I'm off the lazy boy and I'm going to put together the OMG Summit?
Well, it wasn't an easy road and it wasn't always a continuous road. There were days that I wanted to do stuff and I got up and did it, and 2 years ago, I went on a canoe trip for Solo Survivors, which is a singles cancer survivor group, and I learned that I could still have fun and feel like shit because the whole time I was puking down the river as I was being paddled by another canoer.
It's natural. It's right in the river.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody throws up. So it was, I learned then that I could start doing stuff, even if I didn't feel good, which before then I really thought I couldn't do anything. And so it was slow. And I've always blogged and I've always, like, funneled energy. So when people saw me, they saw me as alive. But I would say that that was, like, 10% of my life. And the rest of the time I just stayed at home and didn't go out and didn't talk to people. And conserved my energy for that little bit of time that I was going to go. And I didn't realize how much that physically I wasn't dying, but emotionally I was dying. Hmm. And around that time, I have a lot of friends. I met a lot of people on the canoe trip, and a lot of friends have been to First Descent, and everybody said, you need to go. And I said, no, there's no way. I'm too sick. I was using a cane. I physically didn't feel like I was strong enough, and I thought I'd be a burden on everybody. There's no way that I can go to First Descent. And I refused. And people kept annoying me and kept asking me and telling me I had to go. And I was just like, no, there's no way in hell that I'm going to First Descent. And finally, one of my friends called Brad Ludden and said, you need to call her and get her to go to camp. So last April, he called me and convinced me that I would be healthy enough to go and that I wouldn't be a burden.
So you get a call from the man himself, the founder
from the man himself,
the founder of First Descent, which does kayaking and climbing, hiking, right? Those are the two main events.
They do climbing, kayaking, and now they do surfing.
And now they do surfing, right. And Brad, for the folks out there that are not, he's going to come on soon on the show. But Matthew, you chime in here too. He is a
very, very good-looking man.
Yes. Well, he was on the show once in studio and came with about 18 women.
Yes.
Yeah.
Brad is a like Olympic kayaker or a professional.
He's like a Nike-sponsored
professional kayaker.
Yes. And so he calls you up and says, "Get your butt out here." It doesn't matter. You're going to be able to do this. And
they'll probably talk about it. Is they really give a lot of support to the campers. I mean, it's a well done, first class, supported event. And I was really nervous because I was afraid that I wasn't strong enough. And I went there, and that week literally changed my life. It was the hardest week. I went to Montana in the middle of July, and it was one of the hardest weeks that I've ever had in my entire life, including all the cancer treatments. And it was also the best week of my life.
So talk about that more. I mean, how did you feel kind of emotionally, and how did you have moments where you thought, I can't do this, or did you just continue to build your confidence throughout the week?
It was kind of a little bit of both. I mean, so I get there, and I'm really nervous, and I've always been really scared of whitewater. So that the whole concept that I was going in whitewater was, I was just like, there's no way I'm going to do this.
Well, as opposed to blackwater, because they torture you.
Yeah. Yeah, blackwater would have been worse. And I go, and the first day that we were, the first day we get there, we have to get all your gear and everything, and I wasn't sure at first if they were going to let me be on the, you know, in a kayak because of my physical condition at the time. And then they're like, well, if you want to try, we're going to support you, which is what they do there. They support you in however you want to try to do stuff. And so the first day you get out to a lake and you have to learn to roll the kayak and go upside down.
Go completely
and
right. So that's like doing a 360,
upside down.
Right? Like doing a 360
well,
and coming
like
back.
They do more of a 180
or
and then 180. Bring you back.
Come back up the same side.
Is that your Facebook picture, Allie?
Yes, my Facebook picture.
All right.
And then you have to go back under, and then you have to pull the spray skirt so you can empty out of the kayak and come up. Because if you're on the river and you turn over, you need to be able to exit the kayak if you need to. Well, I go out there, and I start having a full-blown panic attack. I can't do this. I can't go upside down. I had enough trouble getting out of the kayak on land because I just wasn't really physically strong enough to push myself out of the kayak. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to get stuck in here, and I'm going to hang upside down. I can't do this. And we braked for lunch. I didn't go back in the kayak at first. And I thought, I might as well go home. I'm not going to be able to do this. You know, I'm not going to be able to do the whole week. I'm a total failure. I'm such a loser. I can't do this. And I was freaking out. And finally, everybody else went out, and they gave me space. They let me kind of watch everybody else out on the lake, and nobody, like, was nagging me to go out in the kayak. And finally, I was like, okay, I think I want to try this again. And within seconds, they had me back in the kayak because I think they knew that, okay, if you give her too much time to think about it, she's going to back out again. Go out there. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's when Matt, similar to like when Matt asked you to be on the OMG steering committee.
Exactly. Like,
Don't give her too much time.
Don't give her time to think about it.
That's how I get all my victims.
Exactly. So I go back out in the water, and actually on my Facebook is a whole slew of pictures. They helped me, and I did a roll, and the camp photographer took a picture of me. So I have it from me sitting up, halfway down, completely under, back way up, with water streaming out of my helmet, and then sitting back up, gasping for air. And it was a hard moment, but I was able to succeed. And then a couple minutes later, I did the wet exit. And the next day, we went back out on the lake, and I hung upside down for 10 seconds before I gave the signal to be pulled back up. So I steadily improved, and I started gaining more confidence. And one of the things that I learned was on the first day, I kept saying, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And finally, the guide that was with me said, you need to stop apologizing. You know, you're trying. As long as you try, you know, we'll help you in whatever you need, but you don't apologize for anything. You know, you're not doing anything wrong. And I learned then that I was not a burden on people, that it's okay to ask for help. and that I shouldn't apologize for something that I physically or mentally can't do.
Yeah, good lesson all around.
So, Annalise, let me ask you, from the perspective of some of the other people that happened to be on this camp with you, this particular trip with you, were there others that went through a sort of a similar, I guess, emotional, physical, psychological transformation like that?
I'm in touch with a couple people and a lot of them. I don't know if any of them, if it has done for them what it's done for me. Several people are still involved, and a lot of them are going back to camp this year. I don't know if anybody was in the same spot where they felt like just a complete loser and incapable of doing things like I did. But I know that there are many people that have gone to First Ascents and have come out, and it's changed their life. So yeah. I'm not the only person that's done that.
Right.
I've heard so many people and so many stories, and that week it continued to be tough, and I slept every time I was on the got back to land, and I was so exhausted, and I had another kind of panic time on Friday and didn't think I could get back out on the water, and other campers talked me down, and we became quite a close-knit group, and they had guides with me on the water the whole week because of my physical condition, so there was one with me every day. On Friday, one of the other campers turned to me and said that they got in the water that day even though they were scared because I did it.
There you go. A role model.
Allie, we're going to take a break, get to the news, and bring out Darren and Stepmom, and then we'll bring you back on, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
All right, stick around. Allie Ward, everybody, one and only. Okay, now it's time for the news.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
I keep promising to shorten this part, and I keep forgetting to shorten this part. All right, during this part of the Stupid Cancer Show, we announce to our listeners a whole bunch of newsworthy programs, events, and services that we do not want you missing out on. They're all free, and they're all just for young adults with cancer. Things like conferences, happy hours, retreats, kayaking, and mountain climbing trips like this particular show, finance webinars, college scholarships, bar crawls, concerts, tweet-ups, support groups, and more. If you have something coming up during this part of that you'd like us to mention, we will be happy to accommodate you. And
what Matt said.
I just said.
That's why we need to shorten this part of the show.
Please send it to info@stupidcancer.com. Thank you. Good night.
All right.
Brother Neil.
Head on over to events.stupidcancer.com, your one-stop shop calendar for all of our social and educational events nationwide. Stay in the loop. We don't want you missing out on something that could be happening in your neck of the woods, as in what, Kenny?
Well, I'm sure that someone will mention this after me, but June 7th is our annual fundraiser, the UnGala, so look out for that. Come to New York City and hang out with us and party as only we can, Stupid Cancer way. Following that, Friday, June 15th in Texas, there's a Stupid Cancer Happy Hour.
Texas.
And Friday, June 22nd here
in
New York
City. Is that for the entire state of Texas?
It is.
Or is there a specific locale?
It's the whole state.
It's the Dallas-Fort Worth region.
Deep in the heart of.
But everyone is encouraged to descend upon Dallas and Fort Worth.
Yeah, drive 9 hours from.
drive cross-country in
right.
your state. Okay, so Friday, June 22nd here in New York City, Cancer and Careers, the National Conference on Work and Cancer at the Desmond Tutu Center. I just said that because I wanted to say Desmond Tutu.
Yes.
And that is it for the event.
Say it two times.
I will.
All right, presenting the Cancer Card, brought to you by Stupid Cancer. Yes, it's an actual plastic credit card and accompanying keychain fob because it's time to cash in all those pity chips and milk your diagnosis for all it's worth.
He's laughing at his own copy.
I know. Why? Because why not?
I am so smart.
Play your cancer card. You'll be glad you did after all you've earned it. Survivor's Rule, $14.99 for a 10-pack order today at playthecard.org.
All right, the Stupid Cancer Forum, they are 2,500 members strong. This is your premier online community to connect with survivors, patients, parents, caregivers, just like you. You can talk about anything and everything, and they do. It's pretty great. StupidCancerForums.com. Sign up with one click through Facebook.
And as our ginger friend mentioned before, the Stupid Cancer on Gala.
What'd you call me?
The 6th annual Stupid Cancer on Gala in New York City on June 7th. $75 open bar for 3 hours, $25 cash bar.
Attention, Tri-State, come on, come on for our epic club night of dancing, raffles, and the raw power of Stupid Cancer. Visit StupidCancerOnGala.org, and that is your Stupid Cancer News.
I have to correct myself. I think I said Donna Summer had breast cancer and she had
lung cancer.
But I think somebody in the chat room caught that.
I'm perpetuating this by asking.
I don't think she did, but I'm going to look that up. But I don't think
someone said that she was blaming 9/11 for it. Did she live in Manhattan downtown when it happened? We'll find out.
Do not know.
To the Google, we shall find out
very soon.
All right. Well, with that said, let us welcome one of our guests is on the line here, Lisa Goodman Goldstein, aka Stepmom and Mamathon, is the director of development and also the managing captain extraordinaire of First Ascent's athletic fundraising team, Team FD. Lisa was introduced to FD at the ripe young age of 40 when she was asked by her friend, the late former FD director, executive director, Alan Goldberg, to attend a camp. She soon went from volunteer to staff, initially as programming coordinator and more recently taking over as the head of Team FD. She also likes knitting. Well, we won't hold that against her.
Please
welcome.
Who does it?
Stepmom, Lisa Goldstein. Hello, Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hello, everyone.
Hi, Stepmom.
Thanks for having us on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you back. It's been a long time.
It has been, but we are excited. Hopefully you found Brad. He was out in cell phone problems.
Well, we'll wait for him to call in, but I know that he did post on Facebook that he's excited to be on the show tonight.
Yes, we are. Very excited.
Yeah.
How's everyone there?
Everyone's good. I realize the last time we had FD here was when you guys ran the marathon in 2010.
Ooh, that has been a very long time.
Yeah,
What about the one when they had 18 people here?
That was the marathon.
That was the marathon.
That was the last time.
That was November of 2010.
Time flies.
We had 18 of you here in the room. It was crazy. And Brad.
They did the marathon with...
The ING marathon.
Yeah, with Ryan...
Ryan Sutter.
No.
Ryan Sutter.
Yeah.
Very nice. Oh, I think we have Brad. Brad's on the way. But in any case, how are you doing? How's life going out there in Colorado?
Everything is good. We are way.
You just clicked out on us. Keep going.
Programs are underway and everything's great. Just keep them busy.
So we want to hear all about, so do you have a new, is it kind of a new season for FD or what's going on?
We do. Something Brad was going to talk to this. We have about almost 50 programs running this year.
50?
Anywhere. Anywhere.
I'm not impressed.
Why am I not surprised?
Right. Wait, Brad's here. We have Brad. I was going to cue us on like really sexy, handsome music, but I think this is the best I got. All right, Lisa, you're up.
That's pretty good. Brad Ludden, everybody. By 18 years old, Brad Ludden had kayaked in over 20 countries. 20 countries. All right.
I call those Tuesdays.
And found his true passion within the sport when he was 12. We're going backwards now in age. His 38-year-old aunt was diagnosed with breast cancer, and Brad watched her endure a lack of age-appropriate support. Then... he's back to 18. He started working on First Ascent to help young adults like his aunt by giving them the life-changing experience of kayaking, as Allie said. Today, First Ascent offers young adult cancer fighters and survivors ages 18 to 39 a free outdoor adventure experience designed to empower them to climb, paddle, and surf beyond their diagnosis, defy their cancer, reclaim their lives, and connect with others as they do the same. Welcome to the show, everybody. Returning champ, Brad Ludden. Hi, Brad.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Hanson.
I always love my welcomes and introductions to the show. I feel so much cooler than I actually am.
Well, the truth is I haven't embarrassed you fully yet.
Uh-oh.
Because every time you're on the show, and this is your third appearance on the show, I have to mention the fact that you were Cosmopolitan's most eligible bachelor of the year.
It's still eating at him. It's still eating at Matthew, Brad. He can't take it. That's why he has to keep mentioning it.
I was a close 5,000th in that contest.
Matthew,
I would have traded you places.
Matthew, you could be like TechCrunch's, like handsome guy of the year or something like that.
J-Date member of October 2009.
Shut up.
J-Date. Oh, gosh.
Well, we're excited to have you guys on the show. Lisa was just talking about the 50 programs lined up this year.
And we have a whole bunch of people that have been commenting.
Lisa G, that is.
Lisa
yeah.
Goldberger, yeah. Heinstein, Witten, Schweigen, whatever your last name is. Too many Jewish people here tonight. Anyway. Let's go back to Alan Goldberg for a second. I want to start with him because I knew him very well way back in from like 2003, 2004, 2005. And talk to us about, you know, you're an Olympic-level professional kayaker. You're sponsored by Nike. You've been doing this for quite a while now. How did you come across Alan with your aunt? Talk us through the early days.
Yeah, absolutely, Rico. Actually, First Descent had been around for about 5 years the day I met Alan. I was out at the Nike World Headquarters in Beaverton, Oregon. They flew me out because Livestrong and Lance, they were performing their first really big ride when it had switched from Ride for the Roses to Livestrong rides. And anyway, so I went out, and I was supposed to meet with Doug Ullman that day, but Doug was busy, and so they stuck me with Alan. It turned out to be one of the best things that's ever happened to First Descent. And sat down, had an amazing day with Alan. He showed interest in coming onto our board. I was a great move, and shortly after coming onto the board, we as a board decided we need to hire our first ever executive director, and Alan made the most sense. So Alan took the position, left the board, came on as ED, and started running First Descent. At the time, we were actually doing adolescent and young adult. Our programs really seemed to speak better to that young adult population. Alan, having worked, you know, within the cancer landscape his whole life, having been a childhood survivor himself, seemed to know quite a bit and realized that the opportunity and the need and the impact was really with the young adult community. And so he encouraged the board to consider switching fully to young adults, and we, you know, decided that was a great idea, and we haven't looked back since. And so that was like the first 2 months of him as executive director. He was on, unfortunately, shortly thereafter, relapsed with cancer, stayed on with us until the day he passed a few years ago. And in the time he was with First Defense, he really did so much to shape it and drive it and turn it into what it is today. So he kind of lived on.
Sorry, what was Alan's original diagnosis, and how old was he?
He had a rhabdomyosarcoma at 13, and then it came back. It presented in his spine. He was actually, Alan was doing Ironman competitions, a lot of triathlons, really active, and he was actually on a trail run, and he fell, and it kind of hurt his back, and it kept bothering, finally went in for a scan, and turns out it had nothing to do with the fall. So, you know, came back pretty aggressively, treated it as best he could, but just ultimately didn't make it through that. And like I said, he's kind of a legend that lives on at First Defense every day. He seems to be reappearing at every turn, which is pretty cool.
So, and Lisa, you started as a volunteer, so you're a great example of someone who came up through the ranks. What was your first impression when you like, whoa, what is this?
Oh, wow. Well, so it started off with Alan calling my husband and asking him to take on the Leadville 100, which is this insane mountain bike race at over 10,000 feet in Leadville, Colorado.
And just to be clear, we should just mention for folks who don't know, so Alan Goldberg was a triathlete, right, who was basically just that's how you originally, Brad, as you said, you connected with him kind of as two athletes talking?
He actually worked at Livestrong.
Right.
And I met him when I was doing stuff with Nike. I flew out, met him while he was out doing the Livestrong ride. He was just a recreational athlete, you could say, but he was doing things at a professional level. He took it pretty seriously.
Yeah. Okay, Lisa, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. So I watched him and my husband train for this race and talk about his charity, and finally I said, all right, well, I need something to do because my husband was raising money and they were all training for this crazy bike ride, so Alan said, come to camp, and I said, well, what am I going to do there? And he kept saying, you're going to be a camp mom. So I thought, all right, and I went to camp, and literally from the time I stepped onto at the location where camp was, it was just amazing to watch the energy as everyone arrived. Everyone gets a nickname at camp as MZ Nose because he won't come to camp and get one. But everyone gets a nickname at camp.
You may have three children, but I have two at the same time.
No.
Anyway, excuses. Anyway, but yeah, the energy at camp is just amazing. And as everyone knows, the minute from the time I got there till today, I'm just so enamored of the work that First Ascent is doing, and knew that when I left camp after those first 5 days that I had found what I needed to be doing every single day, and just started volunteering and finding more ways to contribute, and eventually
you know, just went on staff because at 35 hours a week or 40 hours a week, it wasn't really a volunteer position anymore.
Right. So, Brad, tell us, we were kind of had started before you jumped on the line here, but we'd love to hear it from you. Tell us, you've got 50-some-odd programs, Lisa was saying, and tell us about all the new and great stuff that's going on with FD.
This could take a while.
Well, first of all, hang on, Brad, hang on. How many programs did FD have, like, 5 years ago? Let's put this in perspective.
So when Alan came to us, we had 3 programs, and we're making the big leap to 5. And then Alan carried us all the way up until we had 9 programs. Which was a considerable amount of growth by percentage. And then when he passed, we took a year and stayed at 9 just because, you know, his passing was a pretty big impact to the organization. Then we, after that year off, we went to 15. Then last year we went to 27. This year we're at 50. And we've added those new locations. We're all over the country. We're in Canada. We're in Central and South America. We've added surfing, rock climbing, mountaineering. Obviously, we still have kayaking. And we've actually added 2-day programming as well. So we're here at the end of the month. We'll be up in New York in partnership with Sloan Kettering doing a 2-day program up there. We're at OHSU, UCLA, USC. We're all over the place. So
great.
A lot of opportunities, a lot of, different places. It's all free. And again, you know, if you're not interested in kayaking, don't be discouraged. We have a lot of other great adventures that you can go on. So really encourage people to get in touch with us, talk to a coordinator, and figure out where the best fit might be for them.
And this is, are you basically in the, I guess it depends what part of the, or what climate you're in, but are there activities that are going on 365 days a year?
Not yet.
Okay.
Well, let me rephrase that. There are, yes, but so we have tiered programming now. And when I mentioned Central and South America, or we're down in Peru. We just finished up a surfing program in Costa Rica. We'll be kayaking in Patagonia, things like that. So those will be more of a year-round program. Our FD 1 and 2, kind of our first and second level programming, is more of a summer, spring to fall thing, and that's mostly domestic. So our goal is to expand that to year-round to accommodate more people's schedules. But as of right now, the majority of our programs fall between May 15th and September 15th.
Right.
So as director of development, you know, Lisa, I mean, I've been privy to watch you guys grow for the last 5 years and vice versa. It's been quite an amazing ride since 2006. And actually, that would be 6 years, which is extraordinary. So how do you recruit? Like, do Americans go to South America? Are you getting survivors internationally going to those destinations? How does your ecosystem ebb and flow?
It's amazing. A lot of our recruitment comes from the Stupid Cancer Show and from people who have been involved in I2Y. We partner with you guys. We partner with Immerman. We do a bunch of different, you know, oncology nurses shows, different, really, mostly still, I'd say, and Brad can correct me if I'm wrong, I'd say most of our participants are still Americans. We do have, when we ran the Canada camp, it was mainly Canadians. We have had someone from Australia. But the recruiting this year has been amazing. We, for our first time in history, have a wait list of over 100 participants who would like to come to our programs. All 50 of them. And
wow.
All of our programs are completely full.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really, and my job as director of development, it's like, okay, where am I going to find enough money to fund more camps? Because that is, to me, what we, you know, that is our mission, is to make sure all these people get to an experience a week at First Ascent.
Wow. So let's talk about that. Where do you get your money to fund? How is it? I mean, how
Brad's
do you guys,
good looks can only generate
can
so
only
much cash.
Can only go so far, right?
They make my job so easy, you have no idea. where do we get? A lot of private donors, a lot of corporations, lots of grants, probably the same places everyone else does. Our biggest fundraising platform last year was Team FD, where we ask our participants and donors and their families, anyone who wants to raise money for First Ascent, to take on a challenge, whether it's doing yoga every day for a month, whether it's the Leadville 100, the New York City Marathon, a bike-a-thon, whatever they want to do and raise money around that challenge. And last year for us, that raised over $800,000. So that was really, really exciting.
And can I just say
wow.
that was a stroke of genius to tap into your alumni network and invite people back based on, I mean, I can't say this directly, and then Allie's still on the phone here, the way in which we structured the summit this year with the Alumni Network, where we got people who have come to past events and incentivized them to raise money, to be there and ensure the success of the event. Very much modeled around what you guys have already seen tremendous success about. And when we raise $800,000 from that, I will then fly to Colorado and go to First Descent.
Yay. I look forward to that.
Promises.
I look forward to that.
All right, Allie. So, Allie, no stress, no challenge there.
Yeah, this year we raised what? I don't even remember.
113.
Over 100,000, and now you want me to raise 800,000 so you can go to camp?
Yeah, exactly. not just so that I can go to camp, but that my wife can hate me for not being home watching the kids while I go. And get stressed
and
doing a flip on a kayak.
I'll match the donation.
Matt, I will do whatever is necessary to get you to camp.
P.S. Matthew travels all the time. It has nothing to do with that. He just doesn't like to be athletic.
I'll match the donation if I can come up with Matt's lefty nickname.
Let's talk about, because Allie talked about her transformative experience at FD, and I'd like to hear from Lisa and Brad. Is there a moment or some anecdote that you can share of a particular camper that really stands out where you really saw the metamorphosis before your eyes and said, wow, this is really what this is all about?
Oh, man, it's hard to pick one.
Yeah.
I think so many of our participants kind of experience it at the same time. Actually, Alan called it the Lieutenant Dan moment, and that seems to have stuck because it's really fitting. In the face of such great challenges, and maybe Alan could speak better to this in her own personal experience, but, you know, when you're a couple hundred feet up on a vertical rock wall or kayaking down a chaotic Class 3 rapid, there's usually this breaking point for anybody, but it seems to be consistent within our participants where they kind of break and they have that, you know, that Lieutenant Dan in the eye of the storm moment.
From Forrest Gump, Lieutenant Dan.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
And he's on the boat in the storm. And
right.
It's kind of that same breakthrough where it's just, I don't know how to describe it or what causes it, but it seems like a lot of our participants kind of have that release, that breakthrough, and we see it so many times. A lot of them, you know, show up. There's maybe some anger, uncertainty, insecurity surrounding their diagnosis, you know, their place in the world socially, professionally, personally, whatever. And they come in, and through the process of these outdoor adventures, they start to maybe break through some of those barriers that have been created, and watching them break through is so amazing.
Yeah.
Kind of get back to living on their terms, and it's really a fun process to be a part of.
But that's the whole point of First Descent. And actually, we should probably just touch on the fact that what is First Descent? What does that mean? Where did that come from?
So First Descent is a pretty well-known term within the extreme kayak community, and it's sort of like, you know, we don't have a Super Bowl or Tour de France, and this, for us, a First Descent is that. It carries a lot of legitimacy and credibility and respect with it, and when you hear that one of your friends pulled off a First Descent, you know, your ears kind of perk up, and you just want to shake their hand. The First Descent is the first time anyone's ever kayaked down a section of river, and so it's, you know, for us, that you can only, even with Google Earth these days, which I didn't have until so old, I didn't have when I was in the prime of my career, you can only scout so much of a river. If no one's ever done it, there's going to be uncertainty. Every time you come around a corner, you kind of hold your breath and wait to see what you're going to get. And so doing a first descent, you know, requires so much, kind of such a big leap of faith, because you really, when you put on that river, it's a one-way street to the takeout. And so you just hope that everything goes well, you know? And it usually doesn't go well, but that's the adventure. And so you take off that river a much different person than you put on, and that adventure really shaped your life and who you are. And so, metaphorically, trying to bring that same experience of a first descent to our programs in that, you know, maybe someone's done this river 10,000 times, but it's the first time our participants have done it. It's their own first descent, and it carries that same transformation with it.
Wow. So, Allie, how did you then incorporate your transformation at First Descent into your daily life once you got back home? How did it manifest itself?
That's hard to answer. For me, it was just remembering that experience and remembering that if I put my mind to something, I could do it. And I think one of the biggest things I did was Stupid Cancer. Matt called me at a fairly weak moment not too long after I got back from camp, when I was still on the high of thinking I could do just about anything, and asked me to be a part of the OMG Summit.
Mind you, I did not correlate that she had just got back from FD. I was planning on asking her anyway.
So for me, it was I had an opportunity to give back to a community and do something for other young adults. And I've done things for First Defense, and I said, okay, I want to do something for Stupid Cancer too. And I decided that I didn't want to be sitting in my lazy boy anymore, that I wanted to be living, and whatever sense of living really was. And it's not possible for me to get out to a kayak every day and go down a river. But
not in Baltimore?
Not in Baltimore. But it's possible for me to get up and work and do something. And that was not something I thought I could do a year ago.
Brad, Lisa, a question. I'm surprised I've never asked this question before, but it's just something that popped into my head. The idea of nurses and social workers who work in oncology that are dealing with a lot of inpatients or in-treatment patients, you know, whether or not they're conscious of that FD should be what I would call a prescription as part of their survivorship program, have you ever gotten any negative feedback? Like, are you crazy? You're going to take a survivor in a river and do this and this and this?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, especially in the early years, I think now we're a bit more of a known entity within the community. You know, we just have this great partnership with Stanford and their lead behavioral scientist to study the programs. We're becoming a bit more credible. And so it's less of a foreign concept to send one of your patients to one of our programs. But in the early days, I started working on this. I guess our first camp, I was 19 years old. Yeah, I was a young professional kayaker, and we'd never done this. And so we were like going door to door to social workers and doctors and just saying, hey, you know, we're taking people on extreme adventures. Do you want to send them? And, I mean, everyone just looked at us like we were crazy. And so, you know, it was like asking someone to test parachutes, you know. They were just like, no, of course not. That's a terrible idea. We're never going to, you know, we're trying to help them and make them safer and better. Anyway, so, you know, it was met with a lot of resistance early on, but I think now it's really come to be known as a, you know, more kind of household name within this, at least the cancer community and such. As such, people are a little more open to sending their patients to it. I will say that we do have a lot of the social workers that say, I'd like to come see it before I recommend or refer someone
right,
to it.
Right.
And so, and we gladly, well, you know, we encourage that. And it's funny because they'll come a little bit on guard and defensive, and they leave just like, you know, send me pamphlets, send me brochures.
Right.
You know, next thing you know, we've got like 72 people applying for it. So sometimes it just takes a little while.
Do you find it interesting that, like, the overwhelming majority of the young adult cancer films that have come out in the past couple of years are all about kayaking?
Well, it's a great visual.
I didn't know they were, but no. Are you talking about, like, Mike Lang up there? And,
yeah,
there's one called The Young Invincibles. There's Mikey Lang's film. There's another one coming out.
Up in Canada, Mike Lang. Yeah.
I was going to say, I missed that scene in 50-50.
Right.
That made the deleted scene.
Right.
Exactly.
No, but I think
there's a
real
ending.
There's such a common experiential thread here with the open water and the freedom of maybe possibly breathing clean air, you know, with no electricity and no internet, like that you're just free from culture and society for a couple of days and you unplug yourself. It's kind of very Est-like from
the
70s.
And just, you know, for filmmaking in particular, such a dramatic...
Very cinematographic,
Visual, right, to see
right.
something so empowering and you're part of nature and you're taking
right.
charge and control and all of those great things that they do.
So even if you don't have cancer, this is still a cool thing to do.
That's right.
It's just even better, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. We encourage everyone to do it.
Right.
Do you still have, when you guys were here and you were doing the marathon, you did it with... with Ryan Suter from The Bachelorette of Trista and Ryan fame, correct? He was a friend of yours before any of the whole Bachelorette notoriety. Isn't that right, Brad?
Yeah. Ryan and I go way, way back. He's lived in Vail a long time, and we have a lot of mutual friends. He's actually, he's best known as like a C-grade reality celebrity, and I'll say that to his face. But the thing that people don't know or sometimes don't realize about Ryan is that he's probably one of the strongest athletes I know. The guy has snowboarded off of Aconcagua. He's done several Ironman competitions. He's riding the Leadville 100, and 6 days later he's doing a 120-mile trail run in Colorado.
Oh my God. Wasn't he a football player too?
He was an All-American safety for CU. He actually got recruited and played a few games for professional NFL teams. I mean, the guy, he's the most humble, unassuming person, but he's just, I can't sing his praises enough as an athlete. He's just so strong. It's ridiculous. So,
wow.
Of course, we recruited him we're like, oh, this guy's got a lot of horsepower. Let's put him to work.
Right.
And so he did a bunch of events for us.
So how do you go about deciding where each new program is going to be held and what it's going to be? Is it going to be, kayaking or mountain climbing or chess? I'd come to the chess retreat if you just did chess. How do you make those decisions? Right.
It's a good question because it's kind of a complicated process as much as it is simple. So, the simple answer is we just look at really, like, literally rad places that we want to go, and we're like, let's go there. And then after, that's sort of like the first phase of it is, like, where's cool, where would we want to go, what would we want to do? Start there. We also ask our assistants where they'd like to go. And then, the more strategic answer is that we start with that rad factor, and then we start to factor in, okay, what markets are we drawing most of our participants from? Where are the most convenient locations to those markets? How can we reduce the cost of travel? Because we pay travel scholarships to all of our first-year participants, and actually next year we're going to start offering them to second-year participants. And then we also look from a development standpoint. A lot of donors want to see local impact.
Right.
And so, for example, New York's a big market for us. We have a couple board members there. We have a lot of traction with our donors there. But they keep saying, okay, well, how many people are going to programs near here? How many people are from here? They want to see results locally. So we sort of look at all of those things combined and then, take the top five and throw them in the bucket and produce.
And what about the accommodations for where people stay? I mean, and can you go, say, if you need, have to have access to medications and things like that? I mean, are they pitching a tent or is it something a little bit more comfortable than that? Like I said, if they have to
Alan
have,
Alda comes to have, every single
yeah,
first descent.
If they have to have, as I said, some sort of, medical access or something, how does that work?
So our participants have to go through not a lengthy, but, just a medical screening process with us and with their primary care physician who ultimately signs off on them. If they're in treatment, it has to be self-administered. We don't provide any sort of clinical treatment at our program. We do have participants who may have to go into a hospital or clinic one day of the program to get treatment or to get some sort of treatment administered. But generally speaking, we try to have our participants work their treatment schedules around the program, and I don't mean that in a cocky way. It's just that with our locations and the activities we're doing, it's a bit easier if they can do that. And so that said, the locations themselves are always fairly close to a major medical center in case of any sort of emergency, cancer or otherwise, which, to be honest, we're most worried about adventure medicine, trauma in the field, things like that.
Yeah.
Broken bones, climbing, whatever. So we also try to find really inspiring, beautiful lodges that are isolated. We try to keep all of our programs so that we are the only people in the facility.
Mm-hmm.
So really nice, everyone's like, well, they find out about our programs. I don't camp. And I'm like, oh, you obviously haven't done any research because we
right.
don't either. Once you get to that third tier, that international travel, you better be prepared to camp. But at those first few levels of our programs, it's really nice, plush accommodation. The programs themselves are pretty exhausting. So to have to come back to a tent at the
right.
end of the night with no shower and no pillow might be a bit much. So
right, so I don't have to use my old mess kit nice. From, yeah, I don't have to use my old mess kit to cook up something to eat from my junior camping days.
So I guess, Brad, sorry, the question, of course, is how are these paid for? Is it free to survivors? Do they get scholarships? Do you raise money to give money away? How does that work?
Yeah, no, it's completely free. So the program period at the end is free, all of our programs. That said, like I mentioned just a minute ago, we do pay travel for any first-time participant who needs it. Next year, we're actually going to start factoring in travel scholarships for second-year participants. Third-year participants have to pay their own travel, but the programs are still free. So if you want to go to Chile and kayak, you have to get yourself there, but once you're there, it's on our dime. We also ask our second-year, it's not mandatory, our third-year it is. If you want to come back, you have to raise enough money, $1,000, to send a first-year participant to a program. So, and that's less, for us, I think, to be honest, it's less about the money as it is about the concept of paying it forward and and studies have proven that philanthropy can in and of itself be somewhat therapeutic. And so just putting yourself in a place of power, a place where you're giving back to someone else who was in the same position, who is in the same position perhaps that you were, you know, and trying to kind of get a leg up on your cancer that way. And so that's sort of the way it works. But as I said, the programs are free forever, period. We have to, you know, Lisa has become skilled at robbing banks and local convenience stores, and it seems to be working out really well.
Very nice. I'm sure that was in your resume, too.
That's so, how we hired her.
So, I mean, I'm really impressed that you were able to come and build out a program here in New York, especially with Sloan Kettering. Did you find working with them, were they receptive to the idea of working with you?
They were, actually. They were extremely receptive. You know, with them, there was a lot of red tape, some stuff that was out of their control, I think just given the size of the center.
Right.
But they've been incredibly supportive, really open to the idea, really like the idea of having just one more opportunity for their patients to get out and do something to kind of unite their young adult community at the center. And so, to be honest, I haven't owned that relationship. I haven't really been in charge of it, so I can't say firsthand what it's been like, but all the feedback I've received has been really positive.
So, and what is the actual program you're doing here in New York?
We're actually doing a lot of them. This weekend program coming up is going to be a climbing program. It's a two-day climbing program, really cool stuff. We have kayaking programs in New York and also a climbing program, I believe, in New York.
Are you climbing like the Trump building?
To me.
Trump building.
We're not in the city, so we actually meet in the city and then head out a few hours and do some climbing out of the city. We're like in Massachusetts, Connecticut. To me, I grew up in Montana. I think our whole state's like twice as big as the Northeast. So
right.
It's all the same.
Do you know what part?
It's all New York, right?
Yeah, well, does anybody know, or Delisa, do you know where? I'm just curious because I live up in the Hudson Valley where there's people do a lot of rock climbing up there.
We're going to be up in the Dunks, as from what I think that's, I don't know if that's the climbing or the kayaking, but I know we're going to be up there.
The Gunks.
Climbing in the Dunks. It's a climbing thing.
isn't gunk in Staten Island?
Yeah, Staten Island's gunk. And by the way, if you're going to kayak down the Hudson, it negates chemotherapy, so it's really good for you.
Yeah, well, it either creates or kills cancer, one of the two. I haven't decided. That river carries something.
Exactly. No, that's very, very cool. I'm sure that building programs in areas where you have both donors that want local impact and major cancer centers that bring credibility and patients and mass are really good things.
Yeah, absolutely. Seems to be.
Very cool. So obviously the website is firstdescents.org, but you're sold out and already have a waiting list for all 50 programs for the rest of the year.
Yes and no. So we do have a waiting list. Our programs are full, but for example, we had 4 spots open up today. So that waiting list, and it's not even first come, first serve. We just find out which program generally, what time of the year you want to do, which adventure, maybe location. And then as soon as a spot opens up, you'll get an email, boom, you're in. So that waiting, and we're going to start adding all of our 2013 programming here in the next couple of months. If Lisa does her job really well, which she has been, there's a really good chance we'll be adding a few more programs actually this year. The best thing to do is get in touch with us. If you go to our website and you click on our programs tab, there are like 4 or 5 fields of information. Once you hit submit, we get that inquiry. You'll receive in the next few days after submitting it, you'll get a call from one of our coordinators who will walk you through the whole application process, get you set up where you want to be. You know, it all begins right there. And so the longer you wait, the more of a chance you have of not coming anytime soon. So I really encourage people to get in there and apply.
So, and this is interesting, correct me if I'm wrong, though. It looks like, looking at your staff here, are you guys kind of a virtual office that people kind of can work anywhere in the 50 states? Because, Lisa, are you Maryland-based?
I am in Maryland. There's only 2 of us who work remotely. Everyone else is in the Denver office.
Okay, they are.
Well,
it's just Whitney,
one guy works on a sailboat.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
We
one
still
guy does work on a sailboat.
I aspire to that.
Yeah, we all do. That's why we hired him, I think, is because we want to learn how to do it ourselves. So we do have people working remotely. We do have our headquarters, our WHQ is here in Denver, and it seems like a really good central location for everything we do, not to mention it's a pretty outdoor-minded city.
Right.
But we also have a lot of our staff that do work remotely. We have a lot of our staff, for example, 2 of them are at our programs right now. We just purchased the mobile office, FC Mobile, which is this sports mobile, that this adventure mobile that travels around the country, and our staff takes it on 2-week-long adventures and visits medical centers, does Team FD events, stops by programs. That's out in California right now, being driven by one of our marketing coordinators. So it's, you know, we do have an office, but we believe, Alan said, and this one was when he was around, that the world was flat. You know, and we believe that, and I think, geez, you know, Matthew Zachary is like the king of tech. So
right.
he could probably tell us all how to live on a sailboat and work.
And how many full paid employees do you guys have at this point?
12 full-time paid employees, and then we have about 25 contract employees that run our program seasonally.
Wow.
And those are like the true dirtbags. They're the heroes. Those guys have it figured out.
So when you do FD Killington, count me in, okay?
Done and done, dude. We'll do it just for you. You know, programs are free for everyone except you. You have to raise $800,000 to go to one, it turns out.
$800,000, okay. I will promise that and then immediately get fired for my
job.
Sell
the kids.
Yeah.
And then you have to, and just leave your cell phone at home. Then we'll really know if you want
to
be there.
Oh, boy.
Whoa,
no, I don't
whoa,
think I,
whoa. One thing at a time.
Yeah, thank you, Brad, for coming to my rescue.
Well, Lisa can start her. Lisa, are you going to start your extreme knitting FD camp?
I'm not allowed to do that. That's
circling
not a challenge.
Back the winner, Lisa Burnett. Wonderful. Very cool. No, people don't know this, but I skied. I downhill skied from the age of 3 to 22.
You've told us.
And it was all
we
downhill.
Know this.
It was all downhill.
But they don't.
From there.
Shut up.
But I'm just.
But they don't. But sorry, Daryl and stepmom don't know this. So I downhill skied for 20 years.
Why'd you stop?
On the bunny hill.
Because I got cancer. That's why I stopped.
His dad stopped pushing him down the hill. Ah, strong, strong boy, go.
Gravity just wasn't
wait,
wanted to do it.
Wait, you just said you stopped because you had cancer. We're talking about FD, where everybody keeps going and being physical
yeah.
because
there
they have cancer.
There was no FD in 1996.
You just contradicted everything that this show
see,
and
no,
these people are about.
I gave birth to FD by proxy, by accident, by getting cancer before they were started.
Matt
there stopped
skiing because of Twinkies.
Yes. No, I... the Twinkies didn't start till later.
All right. Well, this has been a great show. It's always a pleasure to have First Ascents on the show and hear about what's going on. And, boy, you guys are really rocking and rolling. It's great, great stuff.
Amazing stuff.
Congratulations on all your success.
Thank
you,
guys.
Thank
you so much.
All you
do to help make it possible.
We're
going to
have
really
a special FD drinking lounge in Vegas next year just for you guys.
There we go.
And then going
and
kayaking after.
No, we're going to hike the stratosphere. That's what we're going to do.
that qualifies. I'm in.
Ethan Hunt style from Mission Impossible. Exactly.
Awesome.
All right, everybody.
All right. Well, thank you. Allie, any final comments? You are the embodiment of FD's. You know, you came back from the dead, literally, figuratively, emotionally, and you are like a leader now in the young adult movement. Any final comments, Allie?
I just want to say I cannot wait to go to camp again. I go in like 3 months. And I was honored to do my Team FD. I'm going back to Montana.
Nice.
And I did a Team FD challenge. I walked a 5K because of FD, too. So,
wow.
It's done great things in my life.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
Well, thank you guys so much. We love having you on the show, and we'll definitely see you soon. Good luck in New York.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Thank
Brad
you.
Brad Ludden, Lisa Goodman Goldstein, and Allie Ward.
Allie Ward. The First Ascent crew.
I tell you, it really has been amazing watching their organization grow in the last 6 years. I knew Alan Goldberg. He was a great guy, really great, inspiring guy. And honestly, he was one of the first organizational founders and leaders that I ever met who died.
Yeah.
And it was really it was emotional for me because I was an organizational founder and, you know, I could die. You know, just meeting all these young adult survivors who started these amazing organizations. You know, it's a small little niche group, and when you lose somebody, you know, it's...
I was reading about him. It looked like he was 40 years old when he died.
I think so.
Yeah. Wow.
Really amazing. I mean,
yep.
Triathlete, he just puts people to shame.
He,
yeah. You know,
he makes you stand agog.
Agog, and a blob, and,
yep.
and everything else in between. All right. Well,
all right.
With that, let's wrap our show, and here we go.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the... internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so, to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, everybody, that is tonight's show, number 226. We hope you had as much fun as we did poking a stick at stupid cancer.
Special thanks, Kenny Kane, Matt Beckett, and welcome, Brooklyn, to the crazy culture we live in. Special guest, Ellie Ward, Lisa Goldstein, Brad Ludden from First Descent. What a great show.
All right, everybody, join us next week.
Not June, next week.
2 weeks, I'm so sorry. 2 weeks, June 4th. Our topic, fatigue and rehab. And joining us will be Angela Wicker-Ramos. She is a physical therapist at the Sullivan Physical Therapy, Oncology, and Pelvic Floor. This is wrong what I just said.
Yeah.
She's a physical therapist at Sullivan Physical Therapy, and she's a certified lymphedema therapist. And joining us, Jane Fader-Siegel. She's a young adult survivor, Hodgkin's disease.
All right, it's going to be a great show. If you've missed any of our past shows, download them all for free on iTunes at iTunes.stupidcancer.com or check out the archives at stupidcancershow.com. Remember, folks, if it ain't stupid, it ain't cancer. Live from the chemo deck, on behalf of Lisa Bernhard, myself, and our whole team here at Stupid Cancer, have a great week. We'll see you back in 2 weeks. Happy Memorial Day, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're
all veterans of a battle, and the bulk of us more. In this war, too many soldiers are serving multiple tours. So...